Question five. While we're on the topic of petty politics, you've gotten flack in recent years from leftists who are normally sympathetic to your views because of your radical feminist reservations regarding male to female, actually male to trans, people's gender identities. The politics of trans inclusivity are gaining steam day by day across the West. Do you view this as a passing fad, or do you think it's emblematic of a more general cultural decline? Well, first off, my perspective on that is not radical feminist, because radical feminists are women and I'm not a woman. And also, just like we said to the previous question, I happen to fall into ideologies because they agree with my views. Ideologies don't make my views. And in this case, there have been some people who've been, gosh, Derek, we're really surprised that you don't agree with the transgender identity, the gender identity movement. We're really surprised because we thought you were a good lefty. Remember what I said earlier about how at some point people who liked me before are going to hate me? I mean, this is just an example of that. And it's like, no, actually, from the beginning, my work, everything about my work has been about the primacy of physical reality, and that we can think all sorts of things about physical reality, but physical reality is still there, and it's still the basis for everything. And, you know, Earth First was a great concept because the Earth is first. And it's the same, body first. I can have whatever thoughts I want about my body, but that doesn't alter the fact that my body is my body. And also, it kind of cracks me up that, you know, when I used to do cultural make-believe talks, I opened the talk by saying that this book was supposed to be a 5-page introduction to Encyclopedia of Hate Groups, and then I made the mistake of asking, what is a hate group? And the first thing I did is I went to a KKK website, and I looked at the website, and the KKK website said, we are not a hate group. We're a love group because we love whites. And so immediately I was faced with a dilemma. Either A, the KKK is not a hate group, or B, you can't trust rhetoric. And I would say this, everybody would just burst into laughter. And then I would say, so if you don't trust rhetoric, what do you trust? And I would go other ways. My point is that I could do the same joke today, except instead of that, I could say, you know, males who identify as transgender say they're women. But they're still male. Humans don't change sex. So either A, males who identify as transgender are women, or B, you can't trust rhetoric. The same audience that laughed their ass off when I said it earlier would now be trying to kill me. And it's the same. I'm still the same person. I'm still the same person who has always believed that physical reality, my work from the beginning, I mean, from the very, very beginning. Oh my gosh, what is the second paragraph of A Language Older Than Words? It begins, in order to maintain our way of living, we must tell lies to each other, especially to ourselves. From the beginning, my work has been about epistemology and about how do we know something is true? How do we know? And where I always come back to is this. This is what is true. Physical reality is the basis for everything. This is my problem with Bright Green Lies, that they tell us that you can have solar manufacturers or you can have solar harvesting facilities that don't harm the planet. Well, that's just not true. That's physically not true. That's my problem with it. Let's go through and see what's true. And my loyalty, you know, I made a joke earlier about telling a not truth to the neighbor, telling a lie to a neighbor, but that's not what I'm talking about here. That my loyalty is to the land, and my loyalty is to embodied reality, and my loyalty is also to the truth. Consequences be damned. And so the question was, do I view gender identity as a passing fad, or do I think it's emblematic of a more general cultural decline? I think it's emblematic of a lot of things. One is, I think it's a backlash against women's very real gains over the last 30 years. You know, we have, after the American Civil War ended chattel slavery in the United States, ostensibly, the underlying entitlement and hatred by white people of black people figured out another way to manifest through the Jim Crow laws, through the prison industrial complex developed through 1880s through the present. And likewise, there was a lot of resistance to women's only spaces when they first started cropping up. The first women's bathrooms. The reason women fought so hard for bathrooms is so they could have a more robust social life, more robust public life, because they were sexually assaulted in bathrooms. There are children in India right now who are afraid to go, girls in India who don't go to school, don't go to university, because they're afraid of being assaulted in bathrooms. That's one place to assault them. I mean, 25% of all women are raped in their lifetime. 19% fend off rape attempts. I mean, we just have to acknowledge that women have, that as a class, men assault women. And I'm not saying every man assaults every woman. I never said that. I'm saying that as a class. And so women struggled very hard for restrooms in, say, the UK. And what happened to the first women's restroom in the UK? It was burned down by a man because he didn't want it. And so women were able to struggle for that. They got it. Women struggled for Title IX. They struggled for women's sports. They struggled for women's spaces. And there are those who have opposed those spaces, and they've not been able to get traction until postmodernism, queer theory, transgender ideology has done presto changeo. And now you can have the white male millionaire weightlifter from New Zealand who deprives an indigenous Samoan woman of her medal in weightlifting, and the lefties support this. The lefties support a millionaire white male taking a medal away from an indigenous woman who suffered childhood sexual abuse. And the lefties support this. Do I see it as a passing fad? In part, but it goes way back. This is part and parcel. Within patriarchy, there is a violation urge, an urge to violate, that this is why this culture has to go to the moon, has to bomb the moon, has to probe the deepest folds of the ocean. And this is why every treaty with indigenous people is broken, because they have to violate the very genes of creatures, is that the patriarchal urge to violate is to violate everything. There can be nothing. This is why science has to know everything. Within patriarchy, there can be nothing that is not violable, that is not violated. And that includes women's spaces. That there is nothing, nowhere, no place that is free from that patriarchal male violation imperative. Another part of this that is just, that blows me away. I cannot believe that we have an entire country that celebrated the castration of a young teen male, Jazz Jennings. We have, I'm eventually going to write a book on the trans issue. And when I do, one of the things I have to include is this culture's history of patriarchy's history of castration, and how there's a pretty interesting book called Eunuchs for the Kingdoms of Heaven. And now, what are the eunuchs for the kingdoms of Judith Butler? And it's passing fad too. But no, it's part of postmodernism. Postmodernism is this idea. It started off as a great idea, but it's stupid. It is like everything that this culture touches. No matter how smart it starts off, it ends up being stupid. And the smart idea was, you know, we've been taught that, you know, the stories we've been taught are really Eurocentric, that the winner tells the story through history. And so all the stories we've been given are centered on men, centered on European culture, and so on. And that's problematical. You're absolutely right. So they realize that there are all these narratives competing in society, and sometimes one narrative wins over another. Completely smart, brilliant. The problem is that what postmodernism did is go, okay, since there's all these narratives competing, there is no reality underneath them. That's just nuts. And so it's very clear that, of course, this is what's going to happen. That's the end result of, that's the modern secular version of the Christian notion of the great chain of being, where you have heaven is the where the real action is out there. You have a great chain of being where you got God, man, woman, animal, plant, soil, and down here is mindless matter, according to them, and up here is pure mind. You see how this fits in with postmodernism? That postmodernism is, there is no reality, there's only the mind. The great chain of being is, physical reality stinks, the real action, the earth is a veil of tears, and out there, the earth is a veil of tears where we have planet dysphoria, we're in the wrong place, we have dysphoria, because we're really supposed to be in heaven, where Jesus is calling us home. And now, it's the same thing now, except it's that there is no reality, and it's still the mind. It's the same thing. It's the great chain of being all over. So is this a fad? No. This is just end stage body hating. And also, something that's really important to acknowledge about the whole trans issue is in my experience, the most authoritarian issue around. And the postmodernists have to be this way because they have set it up such that if you believe that there is no reality and there are only these stories, you cannot, in fact, win an argument based on fact. You can't, because there is no fact. So all you can do is win your argument through either cheating at discourse, redefining terms constantly, or silencing those who disagree with you. Because every time anybody brings up facts, silence them. Anybody who speaks out against this ideology, anybody who disagrees with this ideology at all, I have in the last week heard of 3 people who have lost their jobs, which had nothing to do with transgender ideology, because they did not agree. They refused to say, hand over their gender fluid chest, that trans women are women. Because they did not do that oath of loyalty, they lost their job. That is because we are at a stage, that's because that's the only way they can win. I mean, if you're going to argue, I've actually heard people argue that procreative sex is among non-human animals is a social construct. And what do you do? What do you do? What do you do with people who How did dinosaurs reproduce? How did humans reproduce? How do we know? I mean, here, this just kills me. So a male who identifies as a woman and a female who identifies as a man have sex. One of them gets pregnant. Which one? Got a coin so we can flip it? Like, we all know which one gets pregnant. And no matter how you identify, no matter how any of them identify, if one of them gets pregnant, it is the female. Identification doesn't mean anything. I can identify as a porpoise, but does that mean I'm going to go swim in the Caribbean Ocean? No, I will drown. I can identify as a Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer. Does that mean that I have a shrine in Cooperstown? No, it doesn't. I can identify as a plumber. Does that mean I can fix the toilet? No, it doesn't. I can identify as anything I want. Identification doesn't mean anything. So is it a passing fad, or I think it is emblematic also of End of Empire. You know, at the end of Empire, things get especially crazy. And we're going to see this more and more often manifested in ways that we can't even imagine. Oh, another part of this is the whole transhumanist push, that it's based on the notion that our bodies are fundamentally flawed and need to be fixed. That's also based on technologization that, see, here's another thing that just kills me about this whole issue, is that the board, a lot of people even like the board would not understand how they're acting this out. But the board had this great line about the society of the spectacle where being becomes having and having becomes consuming. And he said better than that. But basically, that's what we're seeing, where somebody believes a simulacrum of a thing is not a thing itself. So if somebody cuts off your genitals and fashions something that looks somewhat like genitals, that's not in fact genitals. A simulation of a thing is not a thing. I thought that, who's the guy? The guy, this is not a pipe. I thought we established this a long time ago. A simulation of a thing isn't a thing. And that's where we're going, is the replacement of, and we see this all the time. You know, when I want to listen to a bird song, honestly, I go to Cornell All About Birds and I click on Meadowlark. There aren't Meadowlarks here, so I can't, but it's predictable. It's there. It's a machine. It's those pictures, those sounds are replacing real sounds. I mean, how many people go outside? Not many. Anyway, so my hope is that the other thing we haven't talked about yet having to do with this is the role of pornography. We'll get there in a minute. My hope is that the trans activists, you know, here's the thing, is when you talk to normal people, they don't believe any of this. Normal people understand that males aren't females, and that cutting off your penis does not make you a female, and that putting on a dress doesn't make you a female. Normal people understand this. And they understand that it's not fair to have a male competing against a female in sports. Even though I saw this guy the other day saying, you know, there is no evidence that men are inherently better at any sports than women. Really? Really? So what are the odds of every single Major League Baseball player being a male? Well, if we presume there's 750 Major League Baseball players, the odds of every single Major League Baseball player being a male are 1 out of 2 to the 750th, which is, I believe, greater odds than there are atoms in the universe. And that's only major league teams. All the minor league teams are filled with baseball players. I did the math on that. There's like, I don't know how many teams. It's about like 15,000 minor league players, something like that. So I was trepidatious to do this, but I put in the odds. If the odds are 50-50, because there's no advantage to being a male, the odds are 50-50, then the odds of every single minor and major league baseball player being a male are 1 out of 2 to like the 15,000. And I put that into a calculator online, and it broke the calculator. The calculator came back infinity. It couldn't give me a number. So it's just nobody believes this stuff. So, I mean, for God's sake, you know, Judith Butler, this cracks me up. Judith Butler has written in favor of parent-child incest. And she's written that laws against parent-child incest could actually harm children, be an instrument of violation of children. This is all this standard queer theory crap. And she was doing a talk. She's going to do a talk in Brazil, and a bunch of parents angrily confronted her and said, how can you support incest? And Judith Butler expressed astonishment that anybody believed that she wrote in support of incest. And this made me laugh so hard because not even Judith Butler believes Judith Butler. And I mean, nobody, so that's the good news is nobody believes this stuff, and it may just collapse. And I do think that, I mean, there are so many accounts of, you know, men being put into women's prisons and sexually assaulting women, and, you know, male sports, or males going into female sports. Does that all, it can't last. But it can, because look how long capitalism lasted, and that's based on denial of reality. All I know is that when the internet's gone, we're not going to worry about it anymore. And when the internet's gone, and when we are actually back to dealing with real everyday life, we're not going to worry about it.